Jim Suhan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. It is too bad, Jim, that we're not allowed to be inside practices, NBA practices, all the time. But that sounds like yesterday's practice sounds like it was an all-timer.
Yes, and as you noted, we don't get to watch practice. Usually we catch a snippet at the end, sometimes a snippet at the beginning, but for a long time now we haven't been able to watch practices, which is too bad, but which means that we get all of our news through Adrian Wojnarowski or the people at The Athletic. I mean, that's just, you know, they don't prevent things from getting out. They just narrow the number of people who are going to get it first. That's all they're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, we have the complete picture now. Jimmy went in there and went complete egomaniac on everyone. And you know, the sad thing about this, Jeff, there are two sad stories to this. One is the Timberwolves actually thought they were doing some intelligent things. You know, Len Taylor spent a lot of money to hire the guy who appeared to be the clear choice to be his coach, Tom Thibodeau. He was the most accomplished coach available when he was hired. And then Tom Thibodeau went out and got the best player he could possibly acquire, with reasonable assets in Jimmy Butler. You know, I mean, it's all gone to heck. You know, it's fallen apart. But at the time, those decisions looked like, you know, big boy moves for a franchise that has been, you know, toddling about for 30 years. But everybody gave Jimmy Butler too much credit. Mm-hmm. And nobody realized what a raving fool he is.
I mean, this is the thing that would frustrate me. And you made the point. The Timberwolves have been one of those organizations that had, in a lot of people's mind, I mean, they've always been afraid of, I shouldn't say they've always been afraid of taking the next big step. I mean, they've had some great players, but they've always been sort of an afterthought. And yet here, as you say, they got Tom Thibodeau, you know, a coach with a big pedigree, big personality, the right guy to come in and coach that team. They had a good young core. They brought Jimmy Butler in, a guy that, you know, a lot of NBA teams would still love to have, despite what we've seen recently from him. It's kind of hard to sit there and say, you guys did this wrong. You know, what a bunch of morons for doing this. It's like, dude, they kind of did what we all probably would have done in their situation. And what I don't get out of this, though, is what Jimmy Butler thinks he's going to accomplish here. If you're not going to be the first player, you're not the first player, you won't be the last player to be unhappy with your team, find out that what you thought you were buying into wasn't what it turned out to be and you want to move on. That's fine. And the NBA, Jim, we've seen the NBA, they have ways of making this thing work out. This is not the way to do it, though.
No, he's embarrassing himself. And, you know, I said the one sad part story is that the Wolves seem to be on the right track and have this blow up in their face. The other sad story is Jimmy Butler was a great story. Mm-hmm. He's the story. You know, he's the kind of guy we are in the business because we want to tell that story. You know, a pretty good high school player, makes himself into a really nice college player, fairly low draft pick, by sheer effort turns himself into a chiseled, rock-hard NBA player who plays defense, great two-way player, turns himself into a star. That's a great story, and that's the guy we all thought was coming here. And he sold himself as not only a hard worker, but also a leader of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Thibodeau gave him that responsibility, made him his captain, his liaison, his voice. And Jimmy Butler took it and said, I'm not going to lead people by trying to make them better. I'm going to insult everyone around me who I don't think is as tough as me. He's not a leader. He's a schoolyard bully who wants to make the point every day in every way. Hey, none of these other people around me are as good as me. He's become a complete egomaniac, and he's damaging his own brand. And I don't think he's smart enough to realize that.
So how do they get out of this? What do the Timberwolves do to get out of this? At this point, do you just say, screw it? You know, you're here. And that's all we're going to do. We're certainly not going to, because you can't sell low in this guy. Like, you've got to get him. You've got to get a good return for him if you're the Timberwolves, because this is one of those things that, you know, if you panic here, if you're the T-Wolves and you panic here, you send a message to that young core, and it's not the right message to send, I don't think. Never mind your fan base.
The problem is, if you don't trade him, you're stuck. First of all, he's going to walk away next summer anyway. So you really do have to trade him for the best opportunity. And what Tibbs has been trying to do up until yesterday is send the message that, hey, I'd keep Jimmy on my team. I don't have to make a trade. And part of it is that's what he wants to happen. Part of it is also he knows that that provides the best leverage for a deal. But if you don't trade him, he's going to ruin the season, and you're still going to have to trade him before the deadline. So you really do have to trade him now. The owner wants him traded. The question is, can you get decent return? Can you get what we think is on the table from, or has been at times on the table from Miami Heat? Can you get Houston involved? Because Houston would love to have Jimmy Butler. So all Jimmy's done, Jimmy really hasn't changed anything with his behavior other than making himself look terrible.
So what impact do you think this situation is going to have or has had on Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, you know, two of the young guys that seem to be the guys that he's picked as his foil? I mean, I love what you said on Twitter the other day, but I mean, you wouldn't know how Andrew Wiggins is reacting to this because he's got the same look as he has, you know, in the line at Starbucks or whatever, getting a coffee. It's probably the same look you're going to get. But is there any concern that this has an impact on those two guys?
I think Karl Anthony Towns is a really grounded guy, and he wants to be great. And despite what Jimmy says, I think Karl Anthony Towns works really hard. He just doesn't always show it as demonstrably as Jimmy does. And he's not as good a defender. He needs to be a better defensive player. But he's not a slug. He's a hardworking, great young player. And Jimmy should be just saying, hey, you play 5% better on defense, you might be the best player in the league. That's what Jimmy should be doing with him. I think Andrew and Karl are both grounded in their own way. I think Carl's more ambitious. Andrew, I'm not even trying to be satirical here. I just don't think anything affects him. I think he's a young guy who is already rich beyond anybody's wildest dreams, who has never had to play really hard to get where he is today. I don't think anything affects him. The fallout from this is, I think those guys will be more cynical about the business of basketball than they have been previously. They've just seen Jimmy trying to manipulate his way through the league.
Yeah, and that would be my concern. You're right, Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times. I talked to him here during the All-Star game. Seems like a really smart kid. But, I mean, you know, Jimmy Butler's kind of providing the wrong example for these guys. And I'd be more concerned about Wiggins than Towns, to be quite frank, because I just don't know. I don't know what makes Andrew Wiggins tick. I think I know what makes Karl Anthony Towns tick. I don't know what makes Andrew Wiggins tick.
And nobody does. And the fascinating thing about Andrew is when you see him motivated, when he plays against a Los Angeles team, when he plays against a team that could have had him, when he plays against Cleveland, when he plays against LeBron James, when he plays against somebody who sparks his interest, he can be absolutely dominant. He is a phenomenal athlete. And again, it's not that he doesn't work at his game. I've seen him work at his game. And he's a tremendous athlete, and he's a tremendously well-conditioned athlete. He just, the pilot light isn't always on with him, and that's all on him because people have pushed every button you can push with him.
Mm. Hey, Jim, shifting focus a little bit, I want to talk about the Twins and what happened in Minnesota this year. Where did it go wrong for the Twins? Because the Twins were the team on the up and up. I think a lot of people looked at them. I don't know if they'd have them as a dark horse to beat Cleveland. Cleveland's pretty good. But it certainly does seem as if there was a step back taken by the Twins, and ultimately it cost Paul Molitor his job. What's the upshoot of all this?
Really, this franchise has been waiting for Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano to be stars for about 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And it happened briefly for Sano, and then he just ate and drank his way right back to Class A. And Buxton has had months, and he's had a half season where he's been absolutely dominant, but he cannot maintain his hitting mechanics or his hitting approach long enough to stay in the big leagues. He also has had a lot of problems with injuries. So two completely different cases. Buxton's a great kid, a hard worker. He just needs to find the right hitting guru, and I think he'll be a superstar. Sano is the opposite. Sano already has the ability to be a superstar and is just wasting it. He just is not a disciplined human being, and it's showing up, and it's costing him his career. So if those two guys had done what they're supposed to do this year, I think this team would have won 88 games, been in contention all along. Listen, the American League was phenomenal this year. I don't know where that would have gotten them, but they should have been a good team. And those guys going backwards, in addition to Max Kepler going backwards and Jorge Polanco being out half season with a steroid suspension, all the guys who made them special down the stretch last year just didn't do it this year, other than Eddie Rosario. So they actually have pretty nice young pitching, pretty they have more depth in starting pitching than they've probably ever had in franchise history, but the position players failed them.
What do you think they go for manager? We've heard a lot of intriguing names, David Ross, Mark DeRosa, a guy who interviewed really well for a couple of jobs in the offseason. You look at the Aaron Boone decision by the Yankees. I mean, we can debate whether ultimately that's going to work out, but I mean, the Yankees did get to the division series, so it wasn't like it was the worst managerial call in history. It seems as if the game is in a real transition, and what we assume to be the correct CV for a manager is in transition. Where can you see the Twins going here?
I think the clear, obvious number one candidate for them should be Joe Espada.
Mm-hmm.
He's bilingual, which I think is really important in today's game. If you can bring that to the table, he has helped the Astros win. He's worked with Cora. He seems to be the next Joe Madden type out there. Mm-hmm. He's analytically driven. I think he's the easy hire for me. If I'm making a list if anybody asks me to make a list for them, and if it's not him or someone like him, then I think it's Mark DeRosa, David Ross, and kind of somebody coming in and, you could say with fresh ideas or thinking outside the box. But what that also means is they pretty much have to just listen to what the front office wants them to do. I think this front office wants a manager who will just do what they ask them to do.